Live from Music Row in Nashville, this is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.
Good morning, Roy Mathock Jr. here, and we'll be here for the next hour talking about making money and getting ahead and doing the right things with your money. And, you know, we're coming up on IRA season. For many of you that haven't done this already, you have until April 15th to put that money in. And there's a lot of different IRAs that you can do. But bottom line is that if you haven't saved and put that money aside, you need to be thinking about that. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that, the different ones and how it works, and some retirement plan recommendations. And really take your calls, because that's what makes the show great. I'll also take your emails. You can email me at roy@roymatlockjr.com. And you can listen to all of the shows that we've done in the past. I think we're 7 weeks in now, in a form of a podcast, and they're on roymatlockjr.com. And so 737-9522, I'll take your questions as it relates to small business money, things like that. You know, people nowadays are trying to, you know, get ahead. I read about how they're, you know, borrowing more money, and, you know, the economy is booming. And, you know, the reason people borrow more money when the economy is booming is they're more confident, which a lot of times confidence will kill you. But they borrow more money because of that. But I was reading an article I thought was kind of interesting. They said, how much money does it take for someone to accumulate or have in the form of a lump sum? If somebody wrote you a check right now and said, deposit this into your bank account, and you can do whatever you want to do with it, what would be life-changing? And the interesting thing about it was, I started thinking, I said, what would be life-changing? You know, life-changing, what's that number? Well, the number, according to this survey, is $19,800. So $19,800 is life-changing. So I ask you this, would you like to change your life? You know, a lot of people, they say they want to change their life, but do you really want to change your life? Well, according to the survey, it takes $19,800 to do that. So that's not a lot of money to change your life with. But, you know, there is one little challenge. And that challenge is that if you've got 50 bucks left over at the end of the month, and you're trying to figure out how to move forward, you know, that's like a big mountain. And so I wanted to start out about this show about what, you know, I really believe. It's called quality of life. And quality of life is always, it's very easy to define. I mean, most people, they want time and they want money. They want freedom. They want to be able to do things when they want to do it. They want it. They don't want anybody telling them what to do, when to do. They put up with it. But the bottom line is that they really don't want to do that. And so what is quality of life? Well, the quality of life that you have is in direct proportion to the gap between the amount of money that you have coming in and the amount of money that you have going out. And so what you're always wanting to do is figure out a plan that will allow you to have more coming in and less going out, creating that gap. So how do you go about developing the gap? And the gap is what I always talk about to people. You know, it's real simple. If you're losing $100 a month every month, you'll go bankrupt one day. If you're gaining $100 a month every month, you'll get financially in good shape over a period of time. So how do we go about doing that? Well, it starts out with, how do you earn your income? You know, some of you right now that are listening, you're trying to figure out, okay, how can I make more money? And, you know, what can I do to, you know, raise my income? And it's usually pretty simple. You got to do more and know more. I mean, that's not that hard to understand. You know, if you go out and get a new skill set and you don't do anything with it, then it doesn't help you. And at the same time, if you are smart, you know, you go do something, you don't know what you're doing, then you hurt yourself too. So what I would suggest to start with is find a new skill set. So you go out and you find a new skill set, and then you put time into the skill set and you raise your income. So the first step is let's find a new skill set. What can we do in order to raise our value in the marketplace? And then by doing that, we can take that value out to the marketplace, and companies and or customers if you start your own business, which I would recommend you do, will absolutely come your direction because you're bringing something to them that they don't know or that they don't have. You know, I was told one day that, you know, if you'll read enough and study enough, that you'll know more. And when you know more, people will pay you for that knowledge. And so I went about doing things to try to get better in doing that. So there's four ways. I'm going to give you some examples of four ways that we earn our money. It's the only way we earn our money. And that money that we earn allows us to have the ability to do something going forward. And so it starts out, the first way we earn money is we have a job. Now, when we have a job, the benefit of a job, hopefully I wouldn't be working at a job that wouldn't allow me to at least survive and pay my bills. I mean, if in a job market just like this, you should be able to find a job that would allow you to do that. If you can't find a job to allow you to do that, then what you need to do is realize that your valuation in the marketplace is not very high yet. So what are we going to do about it? We're going to increase our value. We're going to know more and we're going to do more. That's real simple. But you start out, you have a job. And when you have a job, the negative of the job is that you have a job. You work for somebody else. And if you really want to get ahead, you don't want to be in a position to where someone else can really control whether you get a paycheck that week or not, because it's what being self-employed is, okay? Being having the ability, if you're self-employed, to make your own paycheck. So if you're not self-employed and you have a job, your income's based on the position, and they pay you the least amount of money possible to get the job done. You would if you own the business. So therefore, what people have to realize, if you're wanting to raise your income, you have to really raise your value. You want to make your employer, if you work for somebody, worried to death you're going to quit, because they will be hurt by that. And in that case, you can easily walk right in there and say, hey, you know, I've been doing a great job here. I need more money. All right, will you pay me more money? And the word on the street right now is it's about 86% of the time that you ask for a raise in today's market, you'll get it. If you actually do a great job and market yourself and you go somewhere else, you possibly can change jobs and most of the time even get more money. So that's the benefit of the job market right now. But the real money is in going out there and being self-employed. That's where you own your own job. And when you own your own job, you might be a real estate agent, or you maybe have a hair, you cut hair in a hair salon. I know the hair salon, you know, a lot of times they rent their chairs, and then they can put as many people in that chair as they can get, and so they build their own business. You might be in sales. You might be a lawyer. You know, a lawyer gets paid by the hour, but they get a high hourly wage, and as a result, they can go do it. You might be going in as far as being a doctor or a dentist, where you trade your hours in for dollars. You own your own job, and as a result, you're able to get make more money. And so that's the second way you can earn money. The third way you earn money is you go out and you develop a system. I had a couple of meetings this week with some people in the medical industry, and they are going to move their business into multiple locations. That's what they're doing. One of them's already got that, and the other one's, that's the plan. And the way they do that is they own a system, and that system is they create a plan to where a business, an entity, an office, or a location can run independent of them. And then what happens is they just manage that. Now, the benefit of doing that is that you have an income stream that someone might buy one day. You have equity in your business, similar to owning a home. As you build up the equity in your house, that's the profit that's left over if you were to sell it. So if you want to go out there and do something like that, you want to go out and build a system. That's the best way to really earn a lot of money and to raise your value. And then lastly, you become an investor by saving your money. So this first part was about raising the income. We're going to talk a little bit as we come back on increasing that quality of life. So give us a call, 615-737-9522. My name is Roy Matlock Jr.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. and talking money this morning. And 737-9522. You can also send me an email, roy at roymatlockjr.com. I've got a number of emails that we're going to answer in just a minute about all kinds of things. But, you know, kind of the theme of the show this morning is, you know, step number one is grow your income. You know, always people ask me, they say, what is it you really do? And I really do a couple things. What I do is I teach people how to go in business for themselves. And, you know, I've counseled and consulted and helped small businesses for years, teach them, you know, how to run their business and how to market their business, things like that. And so that's part of it. You know, one of the key elements, you know, to any success you're going to have in financial affairs is you're going to have to make more money. You got to always understand that, because you got to make more money for a number of reasons. One is that things cost more money every year. You know, the last 20 years we had a 51% inflation rate. So, you know, just to break even, if you were making a dollar, you got to make a $1.51. And so we know that is going to always happen. And but that's just keeping even. And so keeping even is never really what you want to do. And so I always tell people the best thing to do is to get in business for yourself and do something that will allow you to have a sideline business. You know, I first got started 34 years ago. It's amazing. You know, I was 20 at the time, 24 years old, and wanted to do something big, wanted to be somebody, wanted to be more than just working somewhere and barely getting by. And the way I did it was I started in the insurance and investment business. I got my insurance license, and I was so broke that I remember my parents said, what would you like for Christmas? I said, well, can you just pay for my securities license? And so back then, I didn't even have enough money to get my securities license, but I did. Back then, I passed my test, and for almost 2 years, I worked on a part-time basis doing a sideline, but the sideline that I worked was the type of sideline that could turn into a long-term career. And 34 years later, I've been doing that, helping people with their money and continuing to do that. And so I have a great story behind that, because it doesn't matter where you start. I don't care what your background is, that if you make a decision to take your spare time and work toward becoming great at something, I mean, understanding, I mean, every detail, then you're going to have a chance to raise your income. And, you know, if you're one of those people, you just heard one of the ads that we ran in the break that, you know, I train people. That's what I do. I teach them how to do the financial services business. So we do that kind of stuff. And so, and we do it on a part-time basis. I do it part-time because I want people to be able to learn at their own speed. And so if you're interested in something like that, you should call my office at 615-843-2999, or just go to the website and click, I think it's under Earn More Money or Career or something like that. But we've got a lot of good information on roymatlockjr.com. You can pick up a download of How Money Works. So anyway, so with all that being said, we talked about earning money. So what are we going to do about handling our money? Well, there's some things you have to understand about handling money that, you know, the first step is what are you going to do about, you know, some type of budget, you know, to be able to handle your money well? I mean, I believe with more than anything that the most important thing is that you have a plan that allows you to pay yourself first. And that pay yourself first is have money automatically deducted out of your account into savings plans. There's a number of savings plans you need. One is you need, you know, something for future purchases, so that way you don't have a car payment, credit card debt, things like that. So because a lot of your future purchases are going to happen. You know, I had a tire that went, you know, $300 tire, and so just took it in and had a hole in the tire. Now it's something on the side, and I got to replace the tire. So for a lot of people, that's a big deal. So you got to have that money set aside. The other thing you got to have is you got to have long-term retirement planning, and you go and put that into your 401k and things like that. And so you start your budget out by looking at what you have coming in less what you have going out, all the variable expenses. And then what I tell people is find one account that you have X number of dollars each week that goes in, and then the way you go about doing that is each week on Sunday, you just move it in. You got your debit card. You may go to your ATM and get cash out. But the long story short is that whatever that weekly amount is less than what you would earn, okay? So therefore, it leaves a gap. You have a draft account where your money goes into one, all your checks, paychecks go into one place, and you draft out all your bills as well as the big bill that you need to be putting aside, and that is your money going into investments. So you do that, and then at that point, what's left over each week, you can manage that weekly. And then the only other account you have is you have a little bit of money set aside for future purchases and things like that. So we have those. And then we have an emergency fund that's part of that savings. So you got three accounts. You got an emergency fund, you got a future purchase account, and you've got a long-term savings account. And that would be in your 401k or maybe an IRA, which we talked about earlier, which is happening. So I had a couple of emails that came in, and some pretty good ones. You know, here's one of them. It says, "What should I teach my kids about money when they're coming up?" And I think that's a big deal, because I have people all the time. They say, "Roy, they should teach what you're teaching. They should teach it in high school." And the fact of the matter is that, you know, kids come out of high school barely having any clue as to how to even balance their checking account. So, you know, one of the things that I did when my kids were young, I gave them some money, and they had their bank account. And then what would happen is they would have to manage that bank account, that kind of thing. But the other thing that I tell people is this, you know, when kids are teenagers, teach them how a mutual fund works. Teach them about how stupid buying new cars is to someone's financial affairs. I mean, I made the biggest mistakes ever when I was young because I bought new cars and I got myself in debt. And so what I learned after a couple of car payments and worried about losing those cars, that if I could ever get out of those expensive cars, that I would be smarter to buy a used car. And I would tell people, if you have to have transportation, which everybody does, you know, find a $1,000 car and drive it, and then keep saving your money and pay cash, and then go buy you another car and pay cash, and go buy you another car and pay cash. I know that from my perspective, I bought two VW diesel Rabbits back when I was 25 years old. It got 60 miles a gallon, and I think I paid a total of about $5,000 for the two of them. And that was that allowed me to get out from underneath $600 in car payments. It allowed me to start saving money. And as soon as I did that, the $600 that was going to car payments, it took me about a year to pay those two VWs off. Those cars went forever, and I was able to save $600 a month and put that into investments. And so what I would tell you is, what do you teach your kids? Teach them that, you know, the biggest mistakes they can ever make is credit card debt and car payments, and get them into some type of learning. I do a lot of family financial workshops. I brought in my entire family to the office and spent 2 hours with them. I'm talking 19 kids, you know, teenagers, my sisters and my brothers, all their kids and everything like that. And what we did is we went through and we taught them. And one of the benefits of these family workshops that I always tell people to do, if you really want your kids to come to the workshop, then just give them $250 to come. But don't give it to them. You can open up most mutual funds for $250 and get them into an account where they see it, then teach them how they can tie their bank account directly to it, and then suddenly they can pull their phone out and they can click a button and put $20 in or put $5 in into their account. They start seeing it grow, and it's an amazing thing when people start getting excited about, you know, saving money, especially when they're young. They change their whole life. And so we'll be right back.
This is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here in our second half. And 737-9522. If you have an email question, you can email me at roy@roymatlockjr.com. Also, at roymatlockjr.com, you can download this next segment that I'm getting ready to cover, which is kind of retirement recommendations, because people ask me all these questions all the time about, you know, how do I know if I have enough? What should I do? Those kind of things. And so I'm going to hit some of that in this second part of the hour. And we'll be talking about questions like, you know, how much do I need? You know, how much do I need to be pulling? Those kind of things. Also, I want to cover some of the differences in annuities, which it's just amazing to me that all these annuities that are getting pushed on people that just are not good. And so I want to hit that. But I guess that's what the insurance companies like to do. They like to figure out products that are good for the insurance company and bad for the consumer. And I see a ton of those out there, people coming into my office. So, you know, all annuities are not bad, but some annuities you need to avoid. And we'll talk about that kind of thing. So, but, you know, I had a question, what is an RMD? And then also, what do I do if I don't need the RMD? So what an RMD is your required minimum distribution. And that applies to, you know, your retirement plans when you reach age 70 and a half. So if you're in a, you know, a tax-deductible retirement plan, meaning not a, not a Roth, but in a regular traditional IRA, or maybe you have a 401k through your work that you've rolled over, or you got a 401k, whatever it may be, you have to start pulling money out. I have a lot of people that they, you know, they've got Social Security, maybe they have a pension, different things like that. Maybe they got some investment income. And the truth of the matter is they don't even need that money. And what do you do? So what I tell people to do when you have an RMD that you need to take, well, a couple things, depending on your income bracket and things like that, you know, you're going to have to pay the taxes on it. And the good news is today if you're married and you, with the new tax laws, you've got a pretty good size standard deduction. I think it's about $27,000 that you get to write off. So your tax rate's not going to be real high if you're living on a typical $60,000, $70,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year retirement income. So what I always tell people is this, set up an account to where you can automatically move that account, move that RMD into a regular account, in an investment account. You know, I tell people just have the mutual fund that it's in the IRA, just transfer it into a regular, traditional, non-qualified account. Now what's happening is that money, you didn't use it, you didn't need it, I wouldn't take it, because if you take it, then you know, you may just decide to do something with it. And so just move it right over there. So what you'll need is you'll have your IRA, and then you'll have another account, and then that money can just sit there and it can continue to grow. And it will be taxed, and you'll have to pay taxes on it. But the point of it is that with that RMD, you can move that money over. Next question I had is, should I convert my retirement plan to a Roth IRA? All right, well, you know, the benefits of a Roth is that you do not have to do an RMD and that the money grows tax-free. Now, if you realize how Roths work, one of the reasons that you get that tax-free growth is that part of it is that you already paid taxes on the initial contribution. Now, you do get the benefit of tax-free growth. So a Roth account is an after-tax retirement plan. And so what that means is that you can put that money in after taxes, but then it grows tax-free. So the way it works is you put in an after-tax investment. And it's in an IRA is a tax stamp. It's not an investment. A lot of people, they say, well, I went to the bank and got an IRA. No, you didn't get an IRA at the bank. You went to the bank and put your money in a CD or a savings account, and then you tagged it an IRA. Or I've got my IRAs. I went and got a mutual fund. Well, that's fine. Your mutual fund can be tagged as an IRA, or it can be taxed. And so the question is, should I convert to a Roth IRA? Well, it's really a matter of, if you're in a situation where you're in a higher tax bracket and you get out to retirement, and at that point you say you don't need this money, well, you might consider just converting some of that, paying it, and then it grows tax-free from then on out and you never have to pull it out. So sometimes converting will make sense. Most of the time, in my opinion, I always tend to tell people, err to the side of not converting. I never want to give the government my money now with the hope that they don't change the laws later. So if I'm out there and I've got a big retirement plan, very likely I'm going to tell you not to convert it, but there's always the potential for converting. All right, I got another question that came in. All these questions that are geared around, what do I do when I'm, you know, retired, or, you know, that kind of thing. So when should I take Social Security? Now, this one, there's a lot of different nuances to it. It's not nearly as complicated as some people want to make it. They want to make it, a lot of your financial guys want to make it really complicated. And the really complication is in order to get you to come in and sit down with them so they can talk to you about everything else. But it's not nearly as complicated as it may seem. But generally speaking, you've got three options. You can take it early. That's usually around 62. You can take it sometime around 66 or 67, depending on your age. If you go to the Social Security website, that's called your full Social Security benefit. And if you look at that, it'll tell you how long or what age you can get that. And then the next one that you would go into is you wait until you're 70. All right, so let's think about this a little bit. We can get a little bit now. We can get full Social Security when we're 66 or 67, and we can get a bonus, we'll call it, when we're 70, or a full Social Security retirement age where you don't get penalized. Now, if you're working, you should never take Social Security early, meaning the 62, because at 62, if you do that, there's penalties for money that you earn. Now, once you're 66 or 67, you can earn as much money as you want, makes no difference, and you're able to get full Social Security. Now, depending on how much money you have in earnings once you're 66 or 67, you will get taxed on that. And so the way that works is that you may get taxed on up to 50% of your Social Security. It could be 85% of your Social Security, and it depends on your income and whether you're married or not. All of this would be on the Social Security site. And then the last thing is you wait and you take it at 70. All right, and you get a bigger amount. But the interesting thing about it, if you go on the Social Security website, outside of the taxation or the penalties for taking it at 62, the Social Security site says it doesn't really matter when you take it. You're going to end up getting the same amount of money based on the expected life that you're expected to see you're going to have. So let's take a look at what that means. It means that if you take it early at 62, and let's say you're retired and you're not doing anything, you're going to have it for a longer period of time. So let's just say that you're getting $1,200 a month at 62, and you wait until you're 67, and you're going to get $1,700 a month. Well, that's $500 a month more. And you say, well, I need to wait $500. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that you already drew $1,200 a month for 5 years. So $1,200 a month for 5 years, that's $60,000-$70,000 that you've already taken out. And what if you invested that money? Then we add the time value of money, which Social Security doesn't do. So I always tell people, generally speaking, the best time to take it is probably around your full Social Security age, 66, 67. Keep in mind that Social Security is an annuity. So really what's called a life annuity with a joint survivor benefit to it. So if you are married and both of you are drawing Social Security and something happens to one of you, then you get the higher of the two for the remaining spouse. But then if both of you die, then the Social Security ends. And so my question to you is, should I take it early? I don't know. You may, depending on your health, that may be your best benefit. And so you take health concerns, and then you take your personal income during that time, and you come up with it. So anyway, I hope that helps. 615-737-9522. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. We'll be right back.
This is Roy Matlock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour. Now, back to the Money and Business Hour with Roy Matlock Jr.
All right, we're in our last segment right now, and if you have a question you would like answered, you can send me an email, roy@roymatlockjr.com, and we also will take live calls at 615-737-9522. As we went into the break, I was talking about Social Security. And to give you some ideas of some things I've had people do with Social Security, especially when they don't need it, I have set up accounts for them to where we just save that Social Security. And by investing that, and if you're working, you're still maybe eligible for an IRA. You're sure eligible to put in money into your retirement plan. So you can not only take your Social Security and put it and do something with it, you can actually put it into potentially a deductible IRA, which I think is pretty cool. And then what happens is, you know, for when you have to start taking that at 70 and a half, your required minimum distribution on your IRA is actually your Social Security that you had set aside for maybe 66 or so to age 70 and a half. And then you're still living. So what do you get? You start pulling your Social Security, okay, payment, and there you go. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways. There's another thing, too, that you might take a look at if you want to know something about retirement plans. I think it's reasonably good coming from one of the places that doesn't seem to be very easily explained. It's called the IRS.gov. And if you go to the IRS.gov and /retirement-plans, you're going to find these retirement plans. And it goes in and it gives you every detail you can imagine on the different types of retirement plans. I mean, we're talking about 401ks and Roth IRAs and you name it. I mean, it's got every retirement plan. It tells you who's eligible, how much you can deduct, you know, what's the deadlines on it. If you're a self-employed person right now, you still possibly can do a SEP for last year all the way up until tax filing date, which could be as long as October. And so you might go to the IRS retirement plan site and look at that. So as you go into planning this retirement, you know, maybe you're out there a number of years out and you're maybe, you know, 5 or 10 years out and you are looking for, you know, some numbers. So what are the numbers? Well, if someone asks me how much do I need to retire, my rule of thumb is about 16 times their income. Now, 16 times their income would give you a variable retirement plan. So let me give you an example of what that means. If you are making $60,000 a year, so let's say that you're making 60, your goal is to have a retirement plan of 60 grand a year. You would also maybe have your Social Security, but you want that 60 grand. You want to be able to live good, travel, do stuff for your kids and grandkids and everything else. And so your goal is 60 grand. Well, 60 times 16 would be 960,000. And then if you were to pull 6% out of that account that year, all right, you would get $57,600. So that right there puts you at about 60 grand a year. You had 960 times 6%. So now let's say you have that money invested. And, you know, my take is you're going to have somewhat of what's called a balance fund. Most people, when they retire, they're going to be a little more, maybe 55, 60% in equities and the rest in, you know, bonds and stuff like that. So you're not completely in the market. And as a result of that, that year, maybe the market got zero and you pull, and so now you have less in the retirement plan. All right, it went down, and then you pull 6% on a lesser amount. So you got a pay cut. The reason you got a pay cut was because that's typically what happens in business. If you have a year where you get your salary and it's not a great year for the company, a lot of times they don't pay bonuses. And so as a result of not paying bonuses, you have a lesser income that year. Now, let's say that you, the next year, the market, we have a good year. All right, the market is up. And things are going good, and the account grows the following year, you still pull 6% out of it. And this time, though, the difference is in pulling 6% out of it, you get a bigger income. Or another way you look at it is you're refinancing, basically, every year that the account is in there, you're refinancing that at 6%. So you pull out 1/16th of the account value every year. The following year, it goes up again. So that's one way of doing it. So that's 16 times your income, rule of thumb. So then you have to ask yourself, okay, where am I going to go about, you know, investing that money, and what can I do? And I'm going to hit a few little things for people at or near retirement. So if you're young and you're you know, getting started, then you want to be mostly equities. And the reason we do that is we go into equity funds, mutual funds. Those mutual funds, you have a long period of time to be able to do that. I read an article that today, you know, right now that the stock market has got like a 90-year average now of 9.8%, and then it's about up 9.8%, you know, already for the year, or it's over that average. But what people don't realize is very seldom does the stock market pay 9.8%. Very seldom does it do that. What happens is the market is a long-term plan, and so there'll be a period of time where the market stays kind of flat or it goes down a little bit, and then it'll have a run-up, or then it'll take a big pull-down. And so what you have to do when you're planning, if you've got a long period of time, actually you like it when the market's going down because you're able to continue to invest when the market's down. And then what happens is as you get as the market recovers, all those accounts, like anything, you know, 2008, 2009, all the way up to like 2013, pretty much what was happening is as you were investing that money, the market was down, you were able to get a better buy, and then everything recovered. And if you didn't need that money, well, guess what? You just did something called dollar cost averaging into the market. What you did was you were automatically purchasing more shares at a lower price because the market went down. Good deal. And then your existing account values, if you left it alone, recovered and you became a big time winner. And that's why we have, you know, so many people right now. I read an article that just at Fidelity, I think it's they've got over a million accounts, retirement accounts that have over $1 million individually in each one of those accounts. So there's a lot of people out there doing it. Now, if you're getting nearer to retirement, you're going to tone it down a little bit. So let's say you're there and then you've got 10 years. I'm going to tone that account down, especially my lump sum money that's sitting there. So let's say you've got $400,000 or $500,000 or whatever it is, and it's in your retirement account. What I would do is I would tone that down a little bit. I mean, I'd be a little bit more, a little less equity, a little more on the bond side, that kind of deal. And you've got 401ks that kind of do that. There's things called target date funds. A lot of those are not bad. You know, if you're not real clear on what you need to be doing, just go into a target date, and that kind of tells you when you're going to be there. And so what happens is you take the money, you kind of say, I'm going to tone down my most important money. Now, how do we know it's my most important money? What I always tell people, you're in the accumulation stage or you're in the preservation stage. So how do we know if we're in the accumulation stage or preservation stage? Well, the accumulation stage is if you look at your income that you're saving right now. In other words, on a regular monthly basis, you're fully funding your 401k and stuff like that. And the most important thing that you've got going for you is that regular savings that you're putting in as it looks at the amount of money you're going to have at retirement, then you're in the accumulation stage. In other words, words, the money that you're saving now, that's what's going to fund your retirement. It's not the money that's in there. It's the money that you're saving now. The money that's in there is not that much yet, so it's not going to be the big thing that does that. You're in the accumulation stage, and in the accumulation stage, you're probably going to be more aggressive. You're going to have more growth-oriented things. Now, if you look at your retirement account and you say, now, you know, based on what I've got 7 years left, or I've got 10 years left, and the most important thing, if I look, no matter how much I save, if I max out my 401k, it's not going to be nearly as important as me just making sure what I've got has a reasonable rate of return. I call you, you're going into the preservation stage. So the preservation stage is you need to be a little more toned back on the money that you've got. And then that way we don't want to have a 2008 hit you about the time that you retire. And so you tone that back a little bit. And then on some of your regular saving that you're putting in monthly, you can be a little more aggressive with that, because if we have a little downturn, you can pick that up. And don't forget one last thing, and that is called an in-service distribution. If you're at least 59 and a half and you are in one of your retirement plans and you're still working, there's an option called an in-service distribution where you can move that money while you're still employed and you can still contribute and put it into an IRA account. And so with that being said, I hope this has been a good morning for you. If you're out there working hard, trying to get ahead, you can visit roymatlockjr.com. And I have a download called How Money Works. We'll also include with you the retirement recommendations, some of the things I just talked about right there. Also, if you would like me to speak at one of your business events or functions, just shoot me an email, roy@roymatlockjr. We'll be happy to set a time. Maybe I can get out there and do something good for you or your employees. And with that being said, I will talk to you next week.